Bop bopper, and you got me rocking and a rolling, rocking and a reeling, bopper, and bop 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 bopper, and.
What led to the Beach Boys?
I was thinking about Home Improvement.
That led to the Beach Boys?
Yeah, they did an episode with the Beach Boys. Wilson was actually the Beach Boys' cousin. They don't get along. It was a good episode. Simple Simon Metapiemon. The Four-Eyed Radio Network, the Houston Nerdcasting Collective, Space City Nerd, and Musings of a Geek are proud to present the Wuppod! I'm Zach Nanimus.
I'm Johnny Dim.
And tonight, we are going to be talking about how Ben Affleck wants objective control over Batman. How the new Zelda Wii U creator, Eiji, and I'm going to say this wrong, Aonuma, says that there will be a twist on the open-world concept for this Zelda game. And Star Wars is going Canadian. Also, we have a very special interview with Frederick Denning from the game Forced Eternal Arenas, which we will be playing, in what, like 2 weeks on Extra Life?
It's getting close.
So first, what I wanted to jump into was I wanted to talk about Star Wars!
Star Wars!
Now, Johnny, one of the things I wanted to talk about before we jumped right into this was actually a video that you did reacting to the new Star Wars trailer.
Yes.
Okay, for those at home that didn't see it, although it should be all of you, because that thing got a few hundred hits.
Yes.
Which implies that it got 300 hits, which is false.
It's close to that.
Is it?
It's over 200, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, obviously we can't just redo the video right now, but, you know, tell me what you thought.
Oh, the trailer was fantastic. And one of the things I remember that we discussed in the show, either it was on the show or it was that same week, we knew that the trailer was coming on that following Monday.
Yeah, it was like a highly anticipated trailer.
Right. Well, because it's the third and final one before the movie comes out.
Ad space was taken out for this ad.
Yes, it was. they showed it during Monday Night Football, which was funny because I saw a bunch of memes about nerds seeing their first football game because of this. but anyway, it was a great trailer. Let's get that out of the way. You saw more of the characters you love, and you saw just more footage in general. And it did a good job as a trailer is supposed to do, and it gets you really excited about the movie. But what we had asked each other, or at least you asked me, was, do we need this? Do I need to see this trailer? And you don't, at least most people don't, because it's fucking Star Wars Episode 7, directed by J.J. Abrams, and everybody's already excited. And this just, like, this raises everybody's excitement to an unnecessary level.
So you're thinking that people are going to have to get on prescription medication.
Right. This is a health
hack. Stab their parents.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a good thing that Disney has a lot of money because they probably will get sued because of the stabbings. Anyway, I thought the trailer, like I said, was fantastic. Like I said, you didn't need to see it. It's unnecessary, but it's at the same time necessary. Like, you know, you knew they had to put out another trailer. And you got to see a lot of you got to see Leia, I believe, for the first time in the trailers.
And this is just my editor brain going here. I think it's exactly 1/4 of 1 second.
Yeah, it's not very long.
It's almost a subliminal message.
Yeah, and it looks like, well, first off, okay, you see more Han Solo. He seems to be highlighted quite a bit. And I saw one particular theory that makes me worry that you see him so much.
You gonna die?
That's what the theory said, yes. And so that makes me worry a little bit. I thought it also interesting that you do not see Luke Skywalker. I think that was actually a good choice. I mean, apparently you do see him, but he's cloaked. You actually don't see his face. And so I think that's very interesting in and of itself, and I'm glad they didn't show him because it makes that anticipation grow even more. Like, yeah, they're giving us little nuggets. Like, we see this main character, we see that main character, but we don't see the main character, at least the one that we've known for, you know, for many, many years to be the main character, in quotes, of Star Wars. Oh, and I made a bad assumption. I don't know if you noticed by watching this video, but it was very kind of rushed. And it was actually my second time doing that video.
No, I haven't seen the video. I'm going to say that right now.
Oh, of me?
Yeah.
That's fine. It's not a big deal. What I'm saying is you might have noticed that for those who did see it, it was rushed because I literally watched it on Monday Night Football and ran into my office, or I should say the war room, to record that video real quick. And I actually was even more rushed because I recorded it once and I thought it was actually a better version. And my camera decided not to record audio. So I was like, I just trashed it. And then
why didn't you just dub yourself in? That's what they do in Hollyweird.
I don't know. That would have been awful, probably.
You should have changed your accent.
Yeah, I should have done with a British accent.
Now,
yeah.
One thing that nobody's talking about, and I think it bears mentioning. Well, and I'll go ahead and ask you a question to see if you got this too.
Oh, hold on. I'm sorry to cut you off, but the whole reason I was bringing that up was that I did not research something and I misspoke about something. I theorized that our friend Miltos Euronimo was the...
Euronimo.
I know. That.
It's one letter, but imagine if I called you Neeps.
Sure.
Jonathan Neeps.
Sure. Well, I always expected to butcher his name, so I used to not try it. But then I heard him say when you were asking about how to pronounce his name in our interview that we did with him, he said, oh, it sounds like Geronimo. And so I always just put a Y at the front of that and go Geronimo.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. Anyway. The whole point was I theorized that he was Kylo Ren, which is completely false, and I should have at least checked because that's an actor we already know. People know who that is. But from the back, he looks like Miltos because of his hair, and you do see him without his helmet on in that trailer. And I was like, oh, maybe that's him. But I think people know who Miltos is in that movie. I think that's already been figured out. I just didn't look it up before doing that video because I was rushed.
Okay.
But anyway, go ahead. You were making a point.
Right. Did you notice the bomb that Han Solo dropped on us?
Which one?
That's the thing. Nobody noticed. Okay. So a lot of this takes place with Han Solo.
Oh, hold on. Let me guess.
Okay.
The one line that you've heard him say over and over is that all of it's true. Is that what you were referring to?
Yes.
Like saying, like, well, which one would be the bomb? Like, which thing do we think is not true?
Any of what he said, he was like, the Jedi, the Force, the legends, they're all true.
Right.
And of course they're true. For 10,000 years, there were Jedi who were an active political and military entity. Of course it's true. Everybody knew.
Yeah, he may have just been referring to the fantastical stories that were told that were episodes 4, 5, and 6. Like how they stood up to the Empire.
Then why didn't he say something like Skywalker, Leia, Akbar? That's all true. You know? Or why didn't he say the Empire and the Force or something like that? Because I'm sure that not everybody knew what the Emperor was. I'm sure he became like a recluse.
Right.
And, you know, he was on the political stage for like, I don't know, 10... No, I'm sorry. He was on the political stage on a grand scale for about 15 years before he had unadulterated power.
Right.
So of that, you can kind of dial back and be like, I'm going to be in my corner now. Dude. And that's it. And nobody really has an idea of what you are.
Yeah, use Vader as kind of your puppet, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
But the Jedi, that's a much bigger idea. Like, my thoughts on this is either one, we're going to get some sort of plot device that adequately explains the Force away.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is a good idea. Because I know that the extended universe is no longer a thing. And as far as these movies are concerned, but there are references in the original trilogy and the prequels that both suggest that they've been around for a very long time.
Right.
Or we're speaking to a character, presumably, what's her name? Ray?
The female lead.
With staff.
Yeah.
That maybe she is sort of like from a backwoods area of the galaxy, and so she doesn't know anything about this, but it's common knowledge to the people to whom it would be common knowledge, in which case it's not that big a reveal.
Which does make sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, none of us had to, you know, be told that the Force was real. Especially in the context of a Star Wars movie. Characters in movies like this often say this when there's some ambiguity, like when a character from a novel comes to life or something like that. And it's like, it's all true! Come to Treasure Island! It'll stab you. It'll stab you good.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened.
That's my
favorite. I think that was Muppet Treasure Island. That was Tim Curry, which was my best Tim Curry impression.
That is your best Tim Curry impression of that particular role?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Upstage, lads. This is my only number. I honestly can't remember if that's from Muppet Treasure Island or, and this is a real thing, but Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
Yeah.
Is
that new knowledge for you? That but Pirates of the Caribbean exists?
Is it a porn spoof?
No, it's a musical.
Oh. No, I'm not aware.
Okay, yeah, it's actually really good.
Okay. So we have more Star Wars stuff to talk about.
We do have more Star Wars stuff to talk about. So apparently, when Star Wars does come to the home theater, to Netflix, it's only going to be in Canada.
Right. Yeah, and this has to do with a deal that was signed in 2012 between Disney and Netflix to take the place of a current deal between Stars and Disney to have the exclusive TV distribution rights of their movies. One of the articles I read was it was 8 months after that movie, whatever it is, leaves the theaters. And this starts for apparently some movies in 2015. But because of the overlap between Stars and the Starz deal and the Netflix deal, Canada actually gets they get to stream the new Star Wars movie, Episode 7, in 8 months after it's released. But this led me to logically figure out that although with Episode 7 we don't get that in America as far as the Netflix streaming 8 months after it's out of theaters. But we should get the other two. We should get episodes 8 and 9 8 months after. So as soon as it would, I guess, be eligible for to go out on DVD and Blu-ray and all that crap, we would get that on Netflix.
Well, there's also additional movies, the prequels and the original trilogy, except for episode 4, I believe. Episode 4, its distribution license is still specifically 21st Century Fox.
Right, which is weird. You'd think they'd all be together.
Actually, I get it because, you know, Star Wars was an independent film.
Right.
And then afterwards it became a phenomenon, and I'm sure everything became, you know, much more complicated as far as licensing was concerned.
Right.
Now.
Yeah, go ahead.
What I think this is going to mean is that we are actually going to see some post-production changes to episode 7, and we're going to definitely see much larger changes in 8 and 9 that are influenced by their new Canadian audience.
You think so?
Very much so. I think that Rick Moranis is going to be in episode 8. I'll say that right now. And they'll probably CG him in. He'll probably knock Hayden Christensen out of the role as Anakin in whatever capacity Hayden is playing that. That's now going to be Tully from Ghostbusters.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason they couldn't do that, and they should. I don't know if you saw this new Jar Jar Binks version of the latest Episode 7 trailer.
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay. Well, that's an amateur doing that, and it looks really well. I can't imagine if the professional minds over at Disney or whoever's doing it, could just throw him in there real quick. I mean, they should be able to do that across the world. Like, whoever the biggest Bollywood actress or actor is, put that put them in the Indian version. Like they could do regional versions of the different movies.
Now, what I really like about this is because, you know, I know it's not Lucasfilm anymore, but Star Wars now kind of has, you know, very popular tradition of changing the original movies. We'll probably see Rick Moranis redub Vader's lines in the original one.
It still technically is Lucasfilm. It's just Disney owns it.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah.
So you can expect things like, I am your father, you horsehead.
Yes, exactly. This is what we should be doing. Why haven't they done this already?
I'm not going to go there.
And this is great. This is great for collectors too, because then when all the Blu-ray versions of all the different regional ones come out, then it becomes a collector's dream to get all the different regional versions.
And then they'll scrap Rogue One. And they're going to be doing some sort of satellite movies. They're going to do a universe crossover where new Rick Moranis Darth Vader meets Dark Helmet.
Yes.
Spaceballs.
Yes. Do this, Disney. Do this. We have a lot of demands of different companies that are well beyond our influence.
Will not hear this.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's the important thing to take away.
Yeah, that's pretty important.
But no, as far as all this is concerned, meh. It's gonna be on YouTube, at least for a while, and then it's going to go to some of the shadier websites, and if you have a good pop-up blocker, then you're fine. I don't know. As far as streaming in America is concerned, it's whatever. They're going to get my money in the theater, so my conscience is clear. You know, it's not like I'm posting the damn thing.
Yeah, I mean,
And not that I'd watch it, even if, or whatever.
Right, sure. But in the grand scheme of things, it is big news because it's the first time that you're seeing something that big being streamed on Netflix so close to the release.
I thought you were going to say that was the first time we're seeing something this big in Canada. They just got bagels last week.
Yes, they did.
Johnny, what you drinking?
Sorry, I was taking a drink when you said that. You caught me off guard. I'm drinking Sam's Choice Purified Drinking Water.
Sam's Choice Purified Drinking Water.
Yeah.
The only drinking water where all proceeds go straight to a trust fund.
Yeah.
Pick that up today.
Yeah.
Which, actually, that reminds me, speaking of charitable events, once again, we are, you know, we're really just whoring this as well as we can, because we'd like to raise a lot of money for sick kids. We are doing Extra Life this year, in case you hadn't heard.
We are, and it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, we're going to be streaming the entire event. We actually streamed last year with SCN, but we're actually going to have multiple cameras going on this time. You'll be seeing us the entire time. For the first half, we will be doing all RPGs, and you'll be seeing a split screen where I believe it's going to be Terry and I and Johnny and Jason. Those are going to be the two teams. Where we will be playing on the same console initially, and then 2.5 hours later, we're all going to switch. So different play styles are going to influence a much larger experience for each one of us. And then after that, the next day, we're going to do a lot of co-op and just cutting up and stuff like that. And we would love you all to tune in. Johnny, do we already have the URL and everything set up for like where that's going to be broadcasting?
Well, it'll be at our YouTube channel's streaming. gaming.youtube.com/warlocksgamesandbeer. These, of course, the beer part, we have not been able to edit out of these particular URLs, but, you know, whatever. And then twitch.tv/warlocksgamesandbeer. And, of course, the links will be below.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Extra Life is going to be a lot of fun, but other than that, leading up to it, I actually have been playing a lot of a game that is preparing me for our Extra Life experience.
Yes.
I picked up Mario Maker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have actually already designed the level that you'll be playing at Extra Life.
This could possibly just drive me off the edge. And I say that not only because it's going to be frustrating, I know, because I'm sure you made it very difficult for me.
It's all doable. I did post this level, which means that I had to beat it.
Okay, good. And I'm glad. So I do have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be near the end, if not the end, of the Extra Life stream, so mm-hmm. I'm going to be absolutely exhausted. And I don't know. It's going to be very frustrating for me.
Well, you're going to be holding a very expensive controller, so I don't know. A happy pill.
An expensive controller?
Yeah, the Wii U tablet controller.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I won't break it. I won't have the energy to throw it.
This level is called The Two Towers, which actually, if you check out my my Miiverse account, that's Nanners, N-A-N-E-R-Z, then you can actually see it play. Johnny can't.
No.
Because he's a Wii U.
I do not have a Wii U.
Yeah. I think you're really going to enjoy it.
I hope so.
The Eye of Sauron's literally in it.
I'm actually looking forward to that then. I do like Lord of the Rings.
Johnny, what have you been playing lately?
Shit, fuck ton of Halo 3. I get one fuck. Halo 3, because I've been doing...
That sound like a good policy. Aren't you two married?
yes we are.
I thought the intention was that your matrimony... I'm not gonna get into
it. I get one fuck outside the marriage. That's how it works.
And you chose Halo 3.
Yeah, I did. So
I got disc holes. The holes in the center of the disc aren't very wide. I'm not gonna go there either.
I'm sorry, but you just did. But yes, I played a lot of Halo 3. A lot of Halo 3. I'm sorry. What had happened was, I started my day off. I started early. I don't think it was 11 o'clock yet. There was a lot of setup that had to be done because we're doing our Let's Plays, at least the ones over here, in the War Room, a little bit different because I have the HD camera now and I'm using different tools and software to work this so we can finally put a front-facing camera and use that as basically a picture-in-picture.
Yay.
Yeah.
I hate picture-in-picture Let's Plays. I'll do them if that's what people want. I'll do them.
They seem to be the higher quality ones that are done do that, so I don't know.
People I don't know. And the thing is that the people who do these kind of things, they're fine performers. They're obviously popular in doing what their audiences want them to do. But it's like, hey, I would like to watch a video game be played so I don't play it myself and then watch someone else scream at it.
Right.
And that's all it is.
Which I do... I do that a lot, is scream at the games. And we don't have to do this 100% of the time. I'm just saying we do have that tool available, and I'm taking advantage of it right now.
Yeah.
But the Halo 3, it started off with me and Edge of Blade playing. And we played, I think we played probably about a quarter of the game together. And then the rest of it, I was doing it solo. So the difficulty, of course, shoots.
Still think you need that marriage counselor.
So anyway, the difficulty of the game, of course, shot through the roof after I'm playing it by myself, because the great thing about Halo co-op, at least as long as you're not playing Legendary, is that if one of you dies, if the other person escapes combat, you can respawn without having to restart to a checkpoint. And so it became very obvious fairly close to the point that he left the stream or whatever, not the stream, but the Let's Play, that I was going to have some trouble. I encountered a level that was very difficult. And so I'm going to try to do some tricks as far as editing goes to make these actually watchable. But it took me a long time.
To make myself look good.
Yeah. No. I planned on keeping, I'll just tell you right now, one of the things I'm working with, the thought I had was maybe doing what is that music that's always with the Keystone, is it Keystone Cops or whatever? No, it's somebody else. That do 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 do.
Yakety Sax is a classical sax piece that was featured in many episodes of Benny Hill.
Benny Hill is what I was thinking of.
Yes.
But people often mention Benny Hill and the Keystone Cops in the same sentence. So either way, that's what I was thinking about doing is doing all my failed runs, speed them up, and put that music to it. and then once I get to an actual run I'm successful at, let just play it regularly from there.
When you get to the circus march, it's got to be just you falling off pits.
Okay.
Just a montage.
Yeah. I actually had a couple of those where I just was doing well and then I just fell off a bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some very frustrating elements of that game that I forgot about.
I've never played it.
There's some of the vehicles are just fucking stupid.
Now, the game that I'm really looking forward to, and we're also going to try something Johnny wanted to introduce every new segment, was Zelda Wii U.
Yeah. Wait, what'd you want me to do? Zach?
You have to wait for them to cheer.
Oh, my bad. I apologize.
You have no idea how much our fans are just losing their minds at this moment. And we're talking over them, which is extremely rude.
Yeah, they can't hear us anyway.
To quote Captain J, I'm sorry. Did the beginning of your sentence interrupt the middle of theirs?
Nice.
Izave. So, there was actually a... something that one of the developers for the next Zelda game, whether or not it's going to be on Wii U is in question. Even Shigeru Miyamoto, when talking about it, has said, the new Star Fox is going to be on the Wii U. You know, it currently has been scheduled for the Wii U, although they, before that, had taken it off the table indefinitely. So we'll see if it's going to be on the Wii U or the next console.
Because The NX.
Which I'm just going to call the PlayStation N.
That's okay.
That's what they're going to do.
Okay.
Yeah. Although it's going to have peripherals that nobody's going to buy. But at least they'll make money. So, creator for the next Zelda game, that's Eiji Aonuma, says that he wants to put a twist on the open world concept. Which I thought that they already had an Ocarina of Time by giving you an open world and then telling you what order you had to do everything in.
Yeah.
Actually, they started doing that in, what was it? The Force Awakens. Link's Awakening. Link to the Past. There we go.
Force Awakenings.
So why I wanted to talk about this was I wanted to see what you would do to put a twist on the open world concept, because it's very popular right now.
Yes. Yes, it is. Well, I went through a few different things in my mind, like how do you put a twist on an open world concept? And I've got a list here, and some are you can argue maybe not really are twists, but just enhancements, I guess. But first off, I go really rudimentary with it and I just say possibly flight. Like I guess that could be a slight twist. You know, maybe you can travel faster that way, but it's really not a big deal. The other one is fast travel, which is something we've had in open world games for a while.
It always seems to me like, especially in Ocarina of Time, you get Epona and then you start getting fast travel, and right. Epona becomes useless after that. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. The other one, I just decided to go a little bit out there, and I decided to just put in there folding and editing reality itself.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Which could very much be a twist on the open world concept, for sure. And then the other one I had was wormholes, which is similar to that. And then basically fast travel. But there could be more interesting elements of it, like I don't know, maybe there's some complexity. Like it's almost like a task to use the wormholes. Like you have to succeed in something to get there. Which kind of leads me to my last one, which I thought would be the most interesting. And that's maybe random encounters whose results dictate whether a route or area is closed off. So maybe you can use shortcuts, but you can only do it if an encounter, you know, is successful, you know, something like that, where you're tested.
Yeah, there was actually, they didn't highlight it the way that you did just now, but they kind of had that in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, if you had to use, like, high explosives and people drove off and stuff, then you weren't getting a car.
Yeah.
You needed to be successful in your mission of killing everybody before vehicles were exhausted. Now, they didn't highlight that. It was kind of easy to get a car if it was in place and you were being sneaky. Mm-hmm. But no, that actually makes a lot of sense. When you say editing reality, do you mean like you're Link in Hyrule, you pause Hyrule, and then you get to like move people and buildings around?
I don't know. I was very broad when I thought about it, but very specifically, that could be something that you could do. When you just said that, I also thought maybe you can pause Hyrule, jump into another reality, and fight through it. And maybe it's a short segment, but it saves a lot of time because when you pop back into the Hyrule world, you've moved.
Okay.
you know, that could be something too. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you can execute that. But I don't know. I don't know what he could possibly mean by that. I don't know what what did you have in mind?
So I was thinking of the reality editor, but here's my concept. Link would have the ability to pause reality and then create a new one after rearranging elements of Hyrule in a larger scope on a map.
Does he then create another reality that is another Hyrule?
Well, essentially, that would be the reason that he's able to do it, because it's not like we wouldn't want Link to be a giant and just be able to pick up parts of Hyrule, because then he's objectively more powerful than anything that would make sense in a Zelda game.
Sure.
But essentially, the mechanic would just be like, if you know that you need to have a limited... If there's an ability that you'll have for a limited amount of time after doing task A, and you need that ability to do task B, then you can rearrange Hyrule with task A and task B closer together. But that has its own consequence, because everything has to fit on the map.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
it wouldn't feel like a Zelda game at that point to me, but...
Well, once you're done with this process, you go and do it, and you can't do it all the time.
Yeah.
There would be a cooldown for even that, so you need to make the right decision.
Sure.
Yeah. The Wii U hasn't had a Zelda yet.
Right.
And gosh, in 64, they were teasing Zelda before it was out, if I remember correctly, and it was out maybe 1 or 2 years afterwards, you know, and that was a huge release. The Wii had Twilight Princess just, what, 1 year later?
Yeah, I think so.
So if they were able to do a Zelda launch title for the NX, then that would be money in the bank right there. That's exactly what they need to do to generate the kind of interest that they've been looking for in the modern arena.
If they had a solid launch lineup, that would really help that system for sure. It's that or bust, right? They really need to make the NX a successful console.
It's that or start making money hand over fist the way Sega does, just with objectively more popular IPs.
Right.
Across systems that people already have and love.
Yep.
And then we'll be able to distribute older versions that have become classics, because many of them were there at the dawn of home gaming. If you could get Super Mario Brothers All-Star for your Xbox One, would you?
If I wanted what?
If you could get Super Mario All-Stars for your Xbox One, would you?
Yes.
Of course you would. Everybody would.
Yes.
Because that alone would probably dig them out of the hole.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
Because the hole's not that deep, but it does exist. And,
man, I had a good segue, but your thought went on too long. You said something about knowing and loving the IP or whatever, and I was going to say, speaking of knowing and loving, Ben Affleck.
No, we're supposed to announce them. It's supposed to be just this big crater in the middle of the podcast now. Ben Affleck and Batman.
Swear to me.
We know that. Okay. Okay, so go on with your big Ben Affleck story.
Okay. Well, Ben Affleck...
You are very far away from your microphone.
I just turned my head a little bit.
Okay.
But Ben Affleck is... It's been said that he would like to direct a standalone Batman film. And this rumor surfaced originally back in... during the summer. June or July, something like that. And there were some rumors. People were talking about it a little bit. But now someone has brought it up again to him. I think it was in an interview. And he had a statement about it. And he basically was saying he would like to do it, that there has been talk about it. But they can't just say they're doing it now. Because from what I read from – I think it was a quote, not from him, but I think someone from the studio – or Warner Brothers or something like that, that the biggest hurdle in all of this, basically everybody wants him to do it, the biggest hurdle is his schedule. Because he's just started another movie.
That's the Geely sequel, I know.
Yes, yes. Much anticipated.
Do you want to know how far I am away from celebrity gossip?
How far?
When I was preparing for this segment, I was like, oh, I can make jokes about him and Jennifer Lopez. I don't even know if they're together anymore.
No, I don't think so. I think that's been long gone over.
Yeah.
I think that was for less than a year that they were even together.
Right, and now I don't know where his love life is.
I couldn't tell you either.
I'm going to say Vicky Vale. There, done.
Okay. I think I know who it is, but I'm not even I think it's Jennifer Garner, but I could be wrong.
Elektra?
Yeah, I think so.
That's right, because I saw that on the front of People magazine, and the only thought I gave to was ha, they were in a movie.
So the thing is that it seems like everybody thinks that this would be a good idea. And I agree. I think that it would be a good idea. And like I said, the only thing stopping them is kind of his schedule. He started another movie that's not related to the DC Universe. And he's got commitments already with the Justice League movie. And then, of course, the work he's done for Batman vs. Superman, I assume, is done with. But the point is, he's busy. And I don't know. I think that it would be good. I think that they should make it work. I think it's worth it. And I think this is what the DC, universe, as far as on the big screen, really needs, is something like a powerful. And that's what it took for Batman to come back to relevancy, was a really good fucking director. And he got the and of course I'm talking about Christopher Nolan. He got his stuff. He got the Batman back on the map. You know, it's a big deal. And they need to get him.
I don't think I've seen a Ben Affleck directed movie. I've seen a Ben Affleck written movie.
Yeah, which was Good Will Hunting.
Wait, did they also direct it? Did they direct it as a team as well?
I think so. I could be wrong. But
okay.
They definitely wrote it. The one that he wrote and directed, no, I'm not sure if he wrote it, but he did direct it, the fucking one where they made a fake science fiction movie and they were
Argo.
Argo, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he directed that one.
And he seems to direct some really heavy stuff.
Yes, and he also directed the one that his brother was in. It was based off a book. And I'm blanking on the name.
Gone Baby Gone?
Gone Baby Gone. That was it. Yeah.
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 Yeah, and so I think that's going to resonate well with Batman fans, particularly because, The Dark Knight Rises resonated well with Batman fans somehow. So I think it would be successful with him at the helm. I do think that there's a linchpin. There's something that the movie absolutely has to have.
Yeah.
Matt Damon as the Joker.
Well, the Joker's already been picked for that universe.
I don't care. We thought that Batman had been picked for that universe, and that didn't pan out, did it?
Yeah, that's a well-made point.
Do you think that Ben Affleck is the... I want to say Sammy Davis Jr., Robert Downey Jr., that DC has been waiting for?
Yes, I think that very much could be a thing, yes.
The thing is that I don't know if it'll be with Affleck. In fact, I don't think it can be with Batman, the strength of the character. I think it would be the strength of Ben Affleck, not as Batman, but as Ben Affleck. And I know that you can kind of say the same thing about Robert Downey Jr. playing himself as Tony Stark, but that has a lot to do with the character and not the man. And I think the opposite's going to happen. Do you think that that would be effective, or do we have to have the same model that Marvel has been successful with?
I don't think it has to be mirrored exactly. But it's funny that I use that term, because if you use a mirror, it's backwards, actually. But it doesn't
have... Bizarro!
Yeah.
Bizarro!
That's what they need. They need Bizarro.
I love everything about the Bizarro universe. In fact, they can't do it because it would break the canon too much, but I would love to have a DC movie where you learn in the second act that you were in Bizarro land the entire time.
Yeah, they could do that, considering they have so many actor changes between characters and stuff.
Well, the thing is, it breaks the canon because people have angular faces, and there are specific rules to how Bizarros actually speak.
Yeah.
It would be very broken. I guess you could kind of do it with an alternate reality you know, movie, but that's kind of played out and the marketing wouldn't work because the first thing I think of is like, oh, the new Spider-Man movie. And then you don't see him for like an hour. And it's like, oh, when's Spider-Man going to show up? And then like by 30 minutes, you're like, when the hell's Spider-Man going to show up? And you're just done. So it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like the concept. It's screw you.
Okay, well,
you were against it from the beginning, you know, but that's because you don't have faith in me. You're not my dad.
That's true. I'm not your dad.
Either way, speaking of dads, you know who is my dad?
Who?
Friedrich Denning.
That's a weird twist.
Yeah, we were actually fortunate enough to sit down with, well, we didn't sit down. He was in Denmark.
I assume he was sitting down. I think there's an 80% chance he was sitting down.
His Skype profile picture looks pretty laid back.
That's true.
But
he was probably on a beanbag during the interview.
That's racist. Anyway, Friedrich Denning is one of the head developers on a game that we're actually going to be playing during Extra Life called Forced Eternal Arenas.
No.
We're not going to play that? Oh, wait, it's not even out yet.
Yeah, we're not playing Eternal Arenas. We're playing the original Forced.
We're playing the prequel. Okay, when it came out first, is it still the prequel?
No.
No? Okay, no. We're playing the original game that the game he's currently making is based upon, but it all happens in the same world, so it's not like there wasn't a reason to talk to him. It's Forced, and the game he's working on is called Forced Eternal Arenas. Forced was a game, this is actually something that released in 2012, but the story still circulates the internet quite a bit. It's that story about game developers who, you know, wound up, like, stealing away in, like, a classroom at their university, and they were, like, literally living in there, and then they got kicked out, so they all bought a house together, and it was, like, 25 people all just developing a game full-time, and then they took out a big loan and did the Kickstarter, then they still had to take out a big loan, and what they created was actually a pretty, really innovative, okay, you said they've described as Left 4 Dead meets Diablo.
Right, and I think where they got that from is that there's a lot of cooperative play in Left 4 Dead, and then it takes basically that old Diablo, like, I don't know, you wouldn't call it exactly Bird's Eye, because I don't know, that's like three quarters or whatever it is.
But I call it a three-quarter overhead perspective.
Yeah, so it's that perspective. And it's definitely heavy on the co-op. You'd almost say, like, Forced is like the co-op version, where the new game they're developing, Eternal Arenas, is more like the one-player campaign-ish way of making the game. And it looks like a lot of fun, and I think that we're going to get either really frustrated with each other when we play it, because it does require a lot of cooperation. There's going to be four of us. We're kind of stacking the deck against ourselves. But it does look like a lot of fun when we finally succeed at something during the
game. But don't take our word for it. Da-da-da. Welcome to the Force Perspective America and Denmark. I'm Zach Nanimus.
I'm Johnny Dim.
And I'm Friedrich Denning.
But how's it going, Frederick?
It's going good. Just been in a long meeting, but ready and up for a great podcast.
Cool. In case you didn't know, Friedrich Denning is on the development team for a game called Forced Eternal Arenas, which is actually would you call it a sequel to the original Forced game?
Nah, it's not really a sequel. More like a, I guess in spirit, it's a sequel. It's sort of the same universe and some of the same characters, but very different game for sure.
Yeah, so essentially, Forced was a game. It's actually sort of a big story, isn't it? About developers coming together against some pretty extreme circumstances in order to make a game.
Yeah, pretty insane story. I actually wasn't a part of the initial team, so I guess you could say luckily I wasn't really through all that crazy stuff that the original team was. But yeah, basically it started out with the founders, Stefan and Kenneth, who got the idea that they wanted to develop like a really ambitious computer game with multiplayer and 3D and all that kind of stuff. And they ended up living in a classroom at the university for 7 months, And at some point, a teacher who was assigned to actually use a classroom came along, found them living there with, you know, mattresses and microwaves and all that kind of stuff, and kicked them out. So overnight, they had to move to like a really cheap house, sort of at the outskirts of Denmark. And they lived there for, I think, like a year until they had a successful Kickstarter and was able to move to an office in Copenhagen. But that wasn't enough either, so they ended up taking a private bank loan for like $200,000, I think.
Yeah.
Would be sort of the equivalent of that in Danish krona. So that's a pretty intense story. In the end, the game was released, and I think to this day it has sold like 500,000 copies. So it's actually it's a fairly decent success right now.
I was curious. I know you weren't there, but in your opinion, do you think that Forced would have been made if the Kickstarter campaign was like, if Kickstarter did not exist, would we even be talking right now?
Oh, I don't think so. No.
Yeah.
I think that at that point the team were so worn down, and there really wasn't any economic resources they could use at that point. I mean, obviously later they took a bank loan to finish the game, but at that point the game, they had proof that the game would have an interest at least, so they could go to the bank and say, look, we got all these people to found the game on Kickstarter and we're this close to finishing the game. Mm-hmm. I don't think that would be realistic at like before the Kickstarter. So no, I definitely think that that was Alpha and Omega for actually releasing the game in the end.
So Kickstarter was kind of like the petition for the bank loan.
Yeah, not originally, but right. I think the game was so ambitious that the team just kept getting surprised at how long it would take to finish it. It was also a lot about, you know, one thing is to make a good game design and to make the game run in Unity and everything, but it's also like, if you see how the game looked when it was on Kickstarter compared to how it looked in the end, there's a really huge difference. Like, the game really wasn't a pretty game originally. And I think that there was a long period of time where nobody really would touch it, like in terms of releasing it and publishing. And I think it was difficult to see it as a realistic success on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
So
just because of the aesthetics?
There was definitely a... Yeah, definitely. Like, polish is so... there are so many games today that polish and aesthetics is just a huge part of succeeding, and unless you're making, like, a Flappy Bird game.
Right.
So
yeah. Initially, this was much more like Pong or Frogger.
I wouldn't say so.
Just a couple of pixels and a beep boop.
Yeah, there you go.
With a team of over 30.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened.
I before we get too far into this, I was wondering if you could help us describe the game to the people who have not been exposed to it yet. So I saw one thing where it was self-described as Left 4 Dead meets Diablo. Would you consider that accurate?
In lack of better terms, I would, yeah. It's like a top-down it's a top-down action RPG, but so it's sort of, you know, the standard hack and slash with different characters that have different abilities that you level up throughout the game. But what's really awesome about the game is the co-op element of it and the puzzle element. So it's like it definitely plays best if you are four players, and each of the classes that you can select plays out very differently. So you have to... Each member of your team has to take a very different role in playing, and you have to be very good at communicating in order to actually get this orb moving around solving puzzles. So it's what was really funny to me, like also way before I joined the team, was this mixture of like really, really intense action and this like raw communication, team-based puzzle-solving skills. It's just really funny to, you know, sit in your like living room with four of your best friends and just shouting and yelling at each other. And then when you finally succeed, like, it can get really intense.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the reason I had chose this game to play during our Extra Life marathon, because during the second half of our stream, because we're going to be streaming the whole thing, we were actually going to do only co-op games. And there's going to be four of us in the room. So I thought that was perfect. And it sounds like a challenge, especially when you add more like players, because like you said, there's a lot of cooperative play involved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really difficult game as well. And, you know, some people don't like the fact that they get really challenged, because so many games today are really scripted. And if you play like a Call of Duty game, it's kind of like just running through a cutscene, whereas this game like really punishes you, and you really have to use multiple tries to figure out how to solve the puzzles and how to handle the games. Like in some levels, you might have to ignore certain enemies to actually complete the level, and that's, I think, counterintuitive to some players, but other players obviously enjoy the challenge. Like that's also why Dark Souls and stuff like that is becoming so popular, because at least a lot of people are tired of the sort of AAA scripted feeling that a lot of at least console games as well have.
I'll go ahead and say it's completely unheard of. The enemies are the thing that you kill in order to get your frustrations of the world out.
Yeah.
So I feel like this game is going to cause riots now. No one can get out their anger.
I've seen people get out their anger, right? It's just, yeah.
On each other.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So this is really more, this is Diablo meets Bloodsport.
Yeah, I guess you could say so. Yeah, now,
You mentioned the puzzle elements. I know you weren't on the original team, but how would you describe them? Because the first thing I thought of was actually, now this isn't a 2D game, it's a 3D game, but it is a top-down perspective. I thought Zelda when I saw some of these puzzles being performed.
Yeah. I think they are fairly unique. I mean, what I like about them so much is the fact that... So one thing that I should mention is that the layout of the levels changes based on the amount of players in them. So it's not necessarily the same level you experience when you're playing a single player or you're playing co-op. So one of the things that's really awesome is that you really have to work together and you have to communicate, and the orb, which is sort of the core of the puzzle, is used for so many different elements in the game. So the orb might be the thing that one player needs to get out of a pin from an enemy. Another player might need it to sort of kill off a spawning shrine. And a third might be calling it to get healing. So constantly people have to sort of weigh what's more important. And it's really important that you sort of say what you're doing constantly, because if you're not, everyone will be working against each other instead of together. And that's, to me, that's what kind of makes this game unique compared to so many other games, because I really enjoy co-op games, and stuff like Gears of War is something that I really love. But Gears of War is more about really being together while you're playing a shooter game, where this game is actually about you really have to do this stuff together as a team.
Now, one question I had about the orb character, Balthus, does he have like a priority stack, or does he have like a an objective stack, if somebody calls him to do one thing, will he complete that task and then move on to the next request? Or will he literally be pulled in different directions and he'll stop what he's doing?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, because he doesn't have that priority stack. One player calls him, as soon as another player calls him, he will just change direction. So sometimes you can have two players just like mashing on the X button, and he'll just be stuck in the middle because people are not talking together. And that's one of the really fun dynamics of playing it cooperatively.
Is there any way that Balfus the Orb will find reasons to prefer one character over the other? Maybe he'll ignore somebody else's call.
No, not at all.
You can't like give him pets or kisses to make him more loyal to you.
I mean, you could try, but not sure it would work. No, really, it's like no, he just do whatever the last person told him to. So I think it's more about giving kiss and hugs to the person sitting next to you than Balfus, actually.
There you go.
Aw.
Yeah.
Danish games are very different from American games, I
say. Yep. I was curious because you do have the game in the Kickstarter right now that, let's see, has, I'm sure you know off the top of the head, but it only has a 13 days left.
Yeah.
And I was curious because this is still the Forced kind of realm of game, because it's in the same, it's called Forced Eternal Arenas. How is this game different than the original?
From a game design perspective, in a lot of ways, the controls are the same and the perspective is the same, but this is much more focused on single player. Mm-hmm. And like it's where Forced was a very very like designed experience with like very carefully placed objects and obstacles. This is randomly generated with a roguelike approach. So like you'll never experience the game being the same twice. So that's a huge difference as well. And then the whole thing about cards, which is sort of the unique mechanic in Eternal Arenas, that it actually combines this sort of roguelike action game with playing cards and building decks in, you know, classical card collecting game styles such as Magic and Hearthstone and that kind of genre. So it combines two really, really different types of games in a fast-paced action, but with this sort of strategy level thinking with deck building. So that's a really fun dynamic that has been really difficult to pin down, but it actually works really, really well now.
Now, the cards, when I was watching the video for Forced Eternal Arenas, it made me think that the cards that you add to the deck would be the elements that you eventually see in the level. Is that how it works, or are the cards more about your individual abilities to use during gameplay?
The cards... So there's actually two. So you're actually right about both, I'd say, because the cards that you build in your deck yourself is what sort of controls your skills and your level up progression. So it's your deck is what controls your build as you progress through the levels, and your character and your levels will also be affected by the boss. So in each sort of playthrough, you will play against bosses that have designated decks as well, and they play cards that affect your playthroughs a lot. So it can either be stuff that modifies your arena, but it can also just be like spawning extra enemies and stuff like that. So you sort of have both sides of the coin there.
Okay. And this game is also going to introduce companions, correct?
That's correct. Right now there are three different companions that you can play with. and each of them offer a very different style, but essentially a companions are an AI-controlled character that joins you on your journey, and you sort of choose the one that fits you best. We have a ranged companion and a sort of classic melee companion, and then there's this sort of stupid T-Rex character that just like runs headfirst into everything it sees. So
I'm sorry, we dropped you for a second. Did you say sheep character?
No, I said T-Rex. So T-Rex. Okay. Actually, the kind of the opposite. but yeah, it's the T-Rex is a fun one because it's sort of both in design and gameplay. It's just funny to add a T-Rex to your game, but it's also a funny mechanic. It's a fun character from a mechanic point of view because it's really powerful, but it also deals a lot of friendly fire. So it's sort of when it starts charging you, have to get out of the way, I'll just kill you on the way as well.
See, when I think T-Rex, I always think something riding a T-Rex. Are we going to get a patch that allows you to maybe ride him and possibly even shoot lasers?
And that sounds incredibly awesome. I'd say if we win a lot of money, that would definitely be something we could look into spending resources on. Right now, we're kind of doing a Kickstarter to just finish up the game. But I'd say T-Rex and laser should of course be a fairly high priority once that's
That could be definitely a stretch goal.
It could be a stretch goal. Yeah.
There you go.
So one thing I wanted to get into was the story of Forced Arena, because a lot of people actually know about the story of the original Forced development. I know I personally first saw it on Imgur.
Yeah.
So this story gets around, quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if there were any parallels between the development for Forced and Forced Eternal Arenas. Did you find that it's best to just maybe just donate all your savings and just be and just have to live in the same house again because that makes a good game? Or
I'd say that a lot of stuff has changed for the better, that's for sure. The difference between a lot of people just on their bachelor at university making a game and having never made a game before. This time around, it's actually a team of professional developers who knows what they're doing, and the fact that people can go home after work and relax is a big plus as well. But the interesting thing is that people are still super dedicated, and I don't know if you've seen, but Polygon actually just printed a piece about our situation right now, and our situation right now is that everyone in the company has been let go because there are no more money, which is obviously also why we're doing a Kickstarter. But everyone has just not even, I wouldn't even say agreed, because people have just actively said that they just continue working on the game without pay until it's done.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of that kind of dedication and passion is definitely still present in the company.
And and that's not old news. That just happened.
Yeah, that just happened last month or this month, actually. But it's sort of... it's I guess it's pretty, we did an Imgur post about it as well, so sort of to follow up about where we are now. So I guess it was sort of official around a couple of weeks ago, I guess.
Oh, that's amazing. And it's amazing to find that kind of dedication, but seeing this kind of game, because you and I are on the same page about cooperative gaming. It's got to be my favorite genre. I love being able to sit next to somebody and go against the same goal. So I completely understand where these developers are coming from. That's just amazing, that kind of dedication. I'm sure it's happened before, but this is the first instance that I've heard about something like that on that scale.
Yeah, I mean, it's it is a rough patch as a company, sort of. Also because that the company had been established and had a success with the first game, and it was sort of planned out to be able to finish this game within where everyone could actually get paid. But, you know, the estimations went a bit off, and we did some projects that took way, 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 way longer than we expected. What we need to do now is to, you know, buckle up and finish the game. And hopefully this will be a success as well. Hopefully it will be a bigger success even than the first game. And then we can take it from there. And, you know, as an indie company, every experience is a learning experience. And as much better equipped we were when we went from Forced 1 to Forced Eternal Arenas, we will be equally better when we hopefully start developing our new games. So that's the positive side of it.
Yeah. So Warlocks. We call our fans Warlocks. Now, if you like independent gaming, you like co-op, and you love the RPG genre, then I would definitely suggest checking out Forced and Forced Eternal Arenas. Of course, if you're looking at this on our site, you will always find links below. Frederick, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, talk with us about your game.
Yeah, of course, it was a pleasure that you had me come on here. So thanks.
Would you like to add anything, Johnny?
No. Yeah, I've just been staring at being a clock time clock watcher. We are gonna play Forced for Extra Life, so definitely check that out, and definitely check out the arena for Eternal Arena's Kickstarter, which we'll have a link below. Check that out. This game, it looks great, and it's definitely worth your, you know, $5, $10, whatever you're gonna put towards it.
Cool. And now I think it's time to say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks, Frederick.
That was some good stuff.
So before we go, I just want to make sure that everybody remembers that we are having participating in Extra Life. Not like we haven't beaten you over the head with that about a million times during the course of this podcast. Also, don't forget to check out Johnny's new video, his reaction to the NFL Star Wars Cross Universe trailer, the Luke Skywalker.
I've also got another episode of Faxanadu.
Faxanadu?
Yeah.
Hooray!
Hooray!
All that being said, I think it's time to say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
I wish I had another fart burp ready for us, but I don't.
It's okay. I'll just paste it in.
Thanks.
I'm recording. I started that recording just in time.
When everybody keeps repeating, I don't want to say anymore. And everybody's hands receiving. Bar, 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 Barbara Ann. Bar, 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 Barbara Ann. Bar, 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 Barbara Ann. Take my hand. You got me rocking and a rolling, rocking and a reeling, Barbara Ann. Bar, 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 Barbara Ann. Tried Betty Lou, tried Barbara Sue, tried Jimmy Doo, but I thought that would have done with Barbara Ann. Take my hand, Barbara Ann. He got me rocking and rolling, rocking and reeling, Barbara Ann, bar, 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 Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann, bar, 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 Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann. You got me rocking and rolling, rocking and reeling, Barbara Ann, bar, 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 Barbara Ann.
What? What led to the Beach Boys?
I was thinking about Home Improvement.
That led to the Beach Boys?
Yeah, they did an episode with the Beach Boys. Wilson was actually the Beach Boys' cousin. They don't get along. It was a good episode.